are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast this week is Jean Tan, a seasoned corporate affairs practitioner with close to 20 years of experience across a range of disciplines. She's currently the corporate affairs director for Mars Wrigley Asia, which is a part of Mars Incorporated. Good evening, Jean. Thank you for joining us today for an episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast.
Thank you, Sudha. I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts with you and your listeners.
So to start with, give our listeners a quick introduction, and where are you joining us from today?
My name is Jean. I'm Singaporean, so I'm joining you from Singapore this afternoon. And I've been in the reputation and corporate affairs business for coming to 2 decades now. I was trained as a journalist, but I started my career in PR and marketing before eventually making a pivot into corporate reputation, public affairs, and employee engagement. I've worked for different industries and agency and in-house roles, including automotive, financial services, hospitality, technology, and now FMCG.
Brilliant. Congratulations on your new role. So what brought you to Mars?
Thank you. It's been just a little over a year since I joined Mars. I have to say it wasn't my plan to start a new role in the middle of a global pandemic, but sometimes life happens that way. I was actually enjoying the autonomy and learning a lot by running my own consultancy, but Mars offered the opportunity of joining the FMCG industry, which has always been intriguing to me, and in a role that ticked all the boxes, including the chance to lead and shape reputation and policy leadership across a dynamic region like Asia. So when you factor that in alongside the chance to work for billion-dollar brands like M&M's, Sneakers, and Extra in a purpose-led organization, it was really a no-brainer.
That's a very interesting journey and a very important reason to join an organization. I think purpose-led organizations, we are all attracted towards those as we move higher and higher into a career. We want to make sure that what we are doing counts and it is going to make a difference. So as an individual, what does purpose mean to you?
Purpose for me is really more of a propeller and a guide. I see it as a decision-making lens that can permeate both big and small choices in life. For me, purpose isn't an already drawn-up, neatly framed, and forever unchanging statement. It evolves as life evolves, and it motivates me to set meaningful goals. So I really see purpose as a cumulative outcome of setting and reaching meaningful objectives.
So we now live in a time when the business of business is no longer just to do business. I mean, I know of organizations that I have advised where they're very focused on business delivery, but not on communicating their purpose. So how important do you think it is for organizations in today's world to be purpose-led?
I think if an organization wants to attract the right talent, investors, and consumers, you really don't have a choice but to be purpose-led. It's no longer nice to have. But at the same time, organizations need to realize that stakeholders are also wise to companies for merely purpose washing. The pledge over progress era, for me, is way behind us. What we want to see and what we want from credible companies, tangible actions, visible progress, and real investments and resources put behind whatever the company's purpose statement is. And on this point, there were some interesting takeaways from the 2022 Edelman Trust report. Distrust is now the society's default emotions, and this is largely driven by governments and the media who are feeling a cycle of distrust. And on the flip side, businesses are seen as the most trusted institutions, and people are expecting companies and company leaders to step up and shape conversations as well as policy decisions on critical issues. So companies have this incredible opportunity and a huge responsibility to be purpose-led. Now, this doesn't mean that you shy away from the fact that you're here for commercial and profit-making objectives. It's actually making sure that your narrative and your strategy address both purpose and performance and actually show the world how one can actually drive the other.
Yeah, that's true. So like you mentioned, resources and put their weight behind purpose. So how would you articulate purpose in action for organizations? And how can organizations move from rhetoric to action and measurement? You spoke about purpose washing or greenwashing also.
I think it's extremely important to bring purpose to life for our internal and external stakeholders. First and foremost, it's a competitive advantage to have a meaningful, well thought out and sustainable purpose strategy. And it's really important to separate the two. This is not just about a communication strategy. We're talking about a full business strategy that sees purpose integrated into the entire ecosystem of how you operate and how you make big decisions. Then you have to overlay that with a compelling internal and external communications program. Because if purpose is not brought to life, then it's five fancy pages in an annual report or a nice poster in the employee cafeteria.
How important is communications? And are there some good examples that you'd like to share?
In terms of best practice, I can share a few. So starting with the most important one, I think, which is purpose must be owned by the senior leaders. And this starts with the CEO. Not comms, not HR. This cannot be seen as a functional responsibility or passion project. Then I think the second best practice is really critical to integrate and embed the purpose before you communicate. If your company policies, how you hire, how you onboard, how you promote and develop your people, how you manage conflict, how you market your products, how you work with your suppliers, if all of these do not reflect your purpose, you're just not going to get traction and you actually risk the reputation backlash of being seen as just virtue signaling.
So you mentioned that communications or HR, its purpose is not a project owned by one of these. It should be led by C-suite. It should be embedded in the business. But communicating purpose to stakeholders in today's world, it is important. Because more and more people are interested in understanding and knowing if the people they're buying from are purpose-led or not. So how important is communications? Are there some good examples that you'd like to share?
At Mars, we're a firm believer of acts, not ads. So the other best practice, and this links back to the first point, is making sure that you bring your purpose to life through tangible actions. Another point I want to share is leadership buy-in is paramount when it comes to communicating purpose internally. So make sure that your leaders are equipped and empowered to be your purpose ambassadors. I would also challenge companies to even link this to our leaders' KPIs. So this is something that gets measured. This is something that gets really looked at from a performance perspective. Finally, think about purpose as a multi-year strategy rather than a one-off campaign. From experience, a lot of energy and resources tend to be invested right at the beginning, at the launch phase, where it's new and shiny, and then everything tends to fizzle out. Now, purpose takes time to grow roots and gain credibility. So factor that into the planning and execution and ensure that purpose gets top billing, so to speak, in your annual priorities. So in summary, integrate before you communicate, then activate and reiterate.
That's brilliant. So we are in an age of social justice. Consumers and other stakeholders want companies that see social good as a necessity and not just as a marketing strategy, as we were discussing earlier. What do companies need to do to respond to increasing social activism? And I'd say to some extent, employee activism also?
The question of social justice is a really topical one, and I don't have all of the answers. But what I'm really clear about is you have to lead from your purpose when it comes to the positioning that you wish to take, whether it's good or bad. Be very clear and be very consistent in that positioning. The other point here is engage in issues you feel you have the right to have a voice in, so you have the credibility and resources to shape positive change. So, for instance, we are in the business of making chocolate and therefore cocoa sustainability, making sure that we protect human rights within the cocoa supply chain. That's something that we feel very passionate about and we feel we have a right to actually speak up about. So that's what I mean by engaging in issues. You feel you have the right to actually try and shape change. A more technical point here is to integrate social justice responses into your risk management and crisis communications practices so you get the right protocols and processes in place. Pre-aligned response of known hot topic issues facing your industry. Don't wait for a crisis to happen before you start thinking about a narrative. Final point is equally important to know when to walk away from what issues. Don't get drawn into the fray with the noise.
Yeah, that's really interesting and useful. So we are 2 years into the pandemic and it has sort of exacerbated existing inequalities in most parts of the world, including vaccine inequity. And this is not just, you know, in Africa or Latin America, it is across Asia also. What is being done to drive the journey on inclusion and equality in Asia? And what do you think should be the priorities?
Another great question, Sudha. And I'm really glad we're focusing more on inclusion rather than diversity, because inclusion is really the how of diversity. I have to say this is quite a difficult question because Asia isn't one market. And, you know, the DEI issues differ from country to country. I do think gender equality, especially assessing equal economic opportunities, would probably be one common theme across the whole region. So that's probably a solid jump-off point for most companies. The other thing that I like to see more is conversations around the historical expectations on gender norms and gender roles. I would like to also take this chance to highlight a great opportunity. What we sometimes don't think about is 85% of all registered companies in the Asia Pacific region are owned by a family group. And more than 20% of the world's top family businesses ranked by income are based in Asia, with revenues of almost 2 trillion. So family business here are not only economic propellers, but they have increasing influence over ESG and DEI topics, with next generation family leaders taking over the leadership positions. So as we see that leadership change, there's a huge opportunity to also see shifts in DEI, ESG, and other purpose-related themes. So I think this is very exciting and probably deserves to have far more airtime.
That's very interesting. And absolutely, I stand corrected. Asia is not homogenous. There is so much diversity and difference. The whole region probably needs to be treated as different blocks and different geographies. And it was very interesting to hear you speak about family-run businesses, family-owned businesses, and the change that is happening. I recently spoke with someone from India, and this is something similar that I heard, that the next generation is behaving very differently. And this is an opportunity for the next generation to bring in change. How prepared are organizations to embark on this journey in terms of skills, technology, investment, etc.? I mean, if you speak about Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong.
Well, from what I'm observing, there is huge appetite for change and for creating a more equitable environment. Due to societal expectations grounded in cultural values, some of these change conversations may be more challenging to have at home, which is why I think workplaces can become really powerful platforms to ignite new thinking and create a safe space for these conversations. You know, MNCs like Mars have and will continue to invest across all dimensions in terms of skills, technology, and cultivating the right environment to drive more inclusive change. But I think in this part of the world, one of the issues is how to have difficult conversations around gender roles, as well as a broad range of topics considered to be sensitive or even taboo because of the cultural norms and expectations. So while I have no immediate solutions, I personally believe in the power of storytelling and representation. If we have more shared stories of lived experiences that are diverse and celebrate all of our differences, I think we have a better shot at creating an environment that people feel like they can belong.
Yeah, I think, again, there is a huge opportunity there for organizations to support. As a successful woman leader, Jean, what do you believe are the biggest barriers to progress for women in the industry? Again, I'm talking about the region. And how can aspiring women leaders be prepared to overcome them? Because some of it the organization can do for you and create the platforms, but I think a lot of it is also to do with self-doubt and imposter syndrome and not having the confidence to step forward.
Well, another huge question. So biggest barriers to progress for women in the industry. I see it in three lenses. So the first lens would be systemic barriers. And these are much more embedded and based on pretty hard to challenge cultural norms and expectations. Like, for example, a woman should prioritize marriage and childbirth over her career. The second barrier is more structural. So these are barriers that are linked to organizational setups. As an example, most communication and corporate affairs teams are quite lean. So the opportunity to get the top job is narrower. Then there are also self-driven barriers. One thing I often hear is, oh, I'm in communication, so I don't need to be that good with numbers. Or communications is a transferable skill set, so I don't really need to get under the skin of any business or industry to do my job well. I'm glad to say that I believe we're seeing systemic barriers breaking down a lot more. Representation plays a huge role in normalizing female leaders who are balancing and integrating professional and personal aspirations. And you, Sudha, you're a perfect example of that. I think structural barriers can be overcome if you don't see your career as one linear progression. I would advise younger practitioners, whether you're male or female, to broaden your CV at an earlier point in your career. So your progression isn't limited by how one company chooses to structure its communications or corporate affairs function. And also, where possible, gain cross-functional experience so you have the option and the expertise to work across multiple functions makes you more valuable. Self-driven barriers is pretty hard. I think it requires the drive and discipline to become more than just a functional expert. And by the way, if that's what you're aiming for, that's perfectly fine as well. What I'm saying is if you are aiming for the top job, then you need to get out of your functional comfort zone and really make sure that you bring business and financial savvy to the table.
I absolutely agree that success and leadership don't mean the same thing to everyone, and we should allow people to define it in order to be more inclusive. Any advice on leading in times of flux and in times of constant change?
Yeah, nobody likes change unless change is positive. So it's difficult to lead in times of flux and uncertainty. I will say that even though it's challenging as a leader, provide the certainty of transparency. You may not have the answer, but give your people the certainty that you are there to communicate often, even if you don't have the answer. And you will come back to them with the answer when you have it. You know, this is very natural. People look to leaders for guidance when it comes to uncertainty, when it comes to times of crisis. And so I believe as a leader, one of the best things that you can do is to cultivate this environment of trust and assurance. And that really comes through your leadership style and your ability to communicate. One thing I'll add as well is that people look for information when they don't have a trusted source. They start rumors, they get, you know, into little echo chambers. So I would say that even though I understand there's a very fine line for listed companies, one of the leadership obligations and responsibility, especially in times of flux and uncertainty, is to communicate and really lead with the trust and credibility.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's such great advice. And we're at the last question. What are the transformational trends that you see in the industry? Are there any at all?
In terms of the transformational trends, I would say that historically, companies used to see our function in communications or even government relations as more of an output function. But these days, I think companies realize that we are uniquely placed to shift mindset and attitudes. And this is different from marketing because it's different from just getting people to buy a brand, to buy a product. This is demanding something more fundamental, much more emotional. We're talking about loyalty, about changing mindsets. So I think the transformation here is that we will see a lot more behavioral scientists potentially joining this function rather than just people training communications. And I think a lovely matchup is when you've got behavioral science along with, you know, the right use of data to really start nudging people towards the kind of mindset shifts and attitudes that you need as an organization.
This is, again, very interesting because internal communications is so well developed as a function in the Western world. And I tend to see whether it's in India or in Singapore, Malaysia, and even further away in the East, that internal has been not as important as external, but I guess the pandemic has sort of focus the minds of leaders on what is important and how important employees are. And that's why it's a trend, probably, as you mentioned, that it's something that we should look out for.
Another transformational trend, and I think this is more of an opportunity. Companies are incredible in marketing, in selling products or brands externally. We're very good at identifying different demographics. We're very good at understanding them, deriving consumer insights so we can get them at the right time, at the right place, with the right messages. We're not so good at that internally. So the opportunity here is really bring the external best practice into internal communications and actually start seeing our people as diverse and as varied as our external consumers. So I'd love to see how we can really start bringing more of the external communications and marketing best practice into internal engagement and start really changing internal communications, again, from a more kind of output channel-driven function into something that has strategic relevance and can really add value.
Yeah, that's another very insightful point. So on that note, thank you very much, Jean, for being here today and taking time off at the end of a very long day for being a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast.
Thank you, Sudha. It's been amazing. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.